Introduction. Welcome to Odyssey. This is the fourth book in my series retelling the Greek myths. In order to understand and enjoy Odyssey, there's no need, I assure you, to have read the previous three, Mythos, Heroes, and Troy. Naturally, I hope that you might turn to them or have already done so, but the story of the Odyssey stands alone, in every sense. Having said which, it is perhaps worth a walk round the course before the race begins to familiarise ourselves with the world we have entered. This might be best achieved by thinking of the three ages that correspond to the first three books of the sequence. The Age of the Gods. The birth and rise of the gods forms the first part of the book Mythos. After violent acts of overthrow, 12 major divine entities settle themselves upon Mount Olympus to rule the world and its domains. Their king is Zeus, the Sky Father. To begin with, the realm below is populated only by animals, monsters, nymphs, and assorted minor deities. In time, however, Zeus and his friend, the Titan Prometheus, create us, humankind, and before long we spread around the world. Zeus and most of the other Olympians cannot help but busy themselves in our affairs, often punishing what they see as uppity mortal hubris, and just as often involving themselves, at the most carnal level, with those humans they find comely and attractive. The Age of Heroes. Many of the children born to one mortal and one immortal parent rise to heroic demigod status. Perseus, Heracles, Theseus, and Jason, for example. These are the subject of heroes. Courageous and often complicated figures, especially celebrated for their quests and duels with the monsters that intimidate and threaten humankind. Through their victories over these creatures, the world becomes safer and stabler for humans. The first signs of cities, harbours, trade, and agriculture appear in the world. As the years pass and human civilization develops further, its relationship with the immortals begins subtly to change. Humans are obedient in praying and sacrificing to the gods, but more and more of their time and interest is devoted to their own concerns. The gods still interfere on occasion, but become more wary or weary of interbreeding and interfering. Humankind seems more interested in itself, in setting and achieving its own goals. The Age of Man. The Trojan War, though instigated by divine actions and regularly subject to divine intervention and intrusion, is largely fought, suffered, and endured by ordinary men and women. Some of its leading characters have divine blood in their lineage, Achilles, Helen, Odysseus, and Aeneas, for example, and certain of the gods assuredly have a passionate interest in the conflict, but in essence, the Trojan War is a mortal enterprise. And now it is over, and the Greek fleet and its kings, princes, and commanders are anxious to return home. This is the point where Odyssey begins. It is a profoundly human story, but there are gods and monsters enough to be encountered still. After Zeus, the three goddesses Hera, Aphrodite, and Athena feature most heavily in this story, along with the messenger god Hermes. There is a reason for their close involvement, a reason that derives from the episode that triggered the whole Trojan War and its aftermath. Let's reacquaint ourselves with that story. The Judgment of Paris. One momentous day on Mount Ida, outside the city of Troy, Hermes brought a young shepherd named Paris before the three goddesses Hera, Athena, and Aphrodite. Paris was called upon to award a golden apple to the one he judged the most beautiful. He chose Aphrodite, the goddess of love, who had promised him the reward of Helen, the most beautiful of all mortal women. The other two goddesses disappeared in a puff of smoke and acrimony. Aphrodite kept her word, helping Paris to bring Helen from her home in Sparta all the way across the sea to Troy. Humiliated, dishonored, and enraged, Helen's husband Menelaus and his brother Agamemnon, king of Mycenae, raised a colossal invasion force from all over the mainland and islands of Greece with the aim of winning back Helen and their slighted honor. The fleet of Achaeans, Danaans, Hellenes, Argives, easier to call them Greeks, although there was no such country as Greece then, sailed east to Troy, to which they laid siege for 10 brutal, bloody years. Aphrodite naturally sided with Troy, as did her lover the war god Ares, and the archer god twins Artemis and Apollo. Having been, as they saw it, spurned by Paris, Athena and Hera took up the cause of the Greeks. Zeus, distressed by the whole affair, attempted some kind of neutrality. The 10-year deadlock was broken by the most cunning and quickest-witted of the senior Greek warriors, Odysseus of Ithaca, later known by his Roman name of Ulysses, who contrived an extraordinary plan. One morning, the Trojans looked out from their ramparts to see that every ship and tent of the Greek expeditionary force had disappeared. Outside, on the plain of Ilium, the only thing observable was a huge wooden horse. The jubilant Trojans, convinced that victory was theirs and that the Greeks had fled, leaving this artifact behind as a gift, pulled the contrivance into the city. At night, a squadron of Greek soldiers climbed out of a concealed trapdoor in its belly and opened the gates to let in the main body of their army. The population of Troy was put to the sword and the city set ablaze. The war was over. For the Trojans, home was destroyed. For the Greeks, home beckoned.